Hi, this is Bruce Dooley. For this part of the show, I'm just going to throw some 2 and 3 minute factoids at you. I kind of get them stored up once in a while and just kind of, it's things that I'm interested in. I hope other people are also. Let me begin this one by saying it's something I've talked about several times because I love to hate it. Microplastic hotspots in the ocean. We've talked about them before. I think even if you not have any interest, people that are listening or that you talk, that they are aware of the giant floating garbage patches that we have in our oceans. The one in the Great Pacific Northwest, called the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, is now found to be slightly larger than the state of Texas. But over 10 million tons of plastic enter the oceans each year, and even these floating patches only account for a few percentage of that total. So where's the rest of it? Unfortunately, the rest of it is generally down, deep in the ocean in a form of what we call microplastics, tiny fragments of what were large plastic debris that have broken down over time, as well as manufactured polyethylene beads used in various products. According to a new study published in the journal Science, there are actually microplastic hotspots on the ocean floors formed by what we call deep sea currents. They act like kind of little conveyor belts moving this tiny plastic all over in different parts of the ocean. One of these hot spots is off the coast of Italy called the Tyrrhenian Sea. It contains 1.9 million or more microplastic pieces in just 1 square meter. Folks, 3 by 3 by 3, 1 square meter has 1.9 million hunks of plastic in it. This is the highest reported value that we've certainly been able to test and find so far on Earth. Unfortunately, because of their small size, microplastics are ingested by organisms across all levels of the marine food chain and do, incidentally, eventually end up and find their way into us, humans. The spatial distribution and ultimate fate of ocean microplastics are strongly controlled by the near-bed, and fancy word again, folks, thermohaline currents. That's in plain English, folks. These are the deep ocean currents that are caused by different densities in the water, which are caused by different temperatures and, to some degree, how saline the water is in different areas. Thermohaline currents are known to supply oxygen and nutrients to the flora and fauna found all over the bottom of the ocean. As a result, deep sea biodiversity hotspots are likely to be in the same places where those high-density microplastics are found. The discovery of these deep-sea hotspots is another reason I think we need behavior and policy interventions to limit the flow of plastics into our environment, and who's going to pay for it? The plastic companies are not. You know why? Because they're part of the petroleum industry almost 90% of the time. If they're going to dirty the earth, they need to clean it up. If they're going to pollute the air, they need to clean it up. If they're going to dirty, as I said a few weeks ago, 1,400 rivers in the just in the state of Texas, they need to clean them up. So if you want a horse to ride, don't let them get away with it. These big boys don't care. They do what they want, and then they move on. And most of them have left really, really dangerous products. You've heard about them for all these years now in different parts of our country everywhere. And who pays for them? Us. How? In our health, in our children's health, our grandchildren's health, the extra cost it makes to make water clean that's been artificially dirtied by them, the extra money it takes to clean the air that's been polluted by them, and they don't pay anything. Time to balance it out. With warm weather and summer, as far as I'm concerned, actually here, the one thing that comes up, especially when we have our little rainy spells, are fleas and ticks. I'm anti-DEET. You can go to all the Consumer's Reports. You can read all you want. They can tell you how safe it is. But if you go into independent studies from a number of universities and other places, being from South Georgia, I'll use this word, it ain't a good idea. What you want to look for that does work, because a lot of the botanicals are ripoffs also. They put stuff in them that sound like they're great, but they're proven not to be very effective. But there are some that are as effective in general studies as DEET, and one heck of a lot safer for you, your children, especially young children, and in some cases, your pets. Let me recommend a few by name, but first what you want to really be looking for on the label now, it has to state this, is one of two things. One is a plant-based repellent that really works and works very well, and it's called picaridin. Let me spell that so you'll know, but you'll know once you see it. Picaridin or picaridin. P-I-C-A-R-I-D-I-N. Picaridin. P-I-C-A-R-I-D-I-N. The other proven natural product that seems to work very well on some people is called oil of lemon eucalyptus. Oil of lemon eucalyptus, they actually shorten it, it's capital O-L-E. It has its own acronym. In the right percentage, about 30%, so it tastes a pretty good load, works very well for most people. Picaridin works the best at 20%, but there's one from the off family, and I don't usually like off, but there's an off family care insect repellent 8, they call it, with picaridin. And it's only 10%, but seems to work as well as, or better on some people than DEET does. It's first about the same amount of money, so you're not saving money, but you're certainly putting something, especially on your children, that's safer than DEET products. I don't usually recommend brand names, but these particular products are a little difficult to find. So I'm going to give you a few names that if you find them, they've already been tested even by Consumer Reports, which basically thinks DEET's the best thing on earth, but they have recommended these following products. Natrapel brand tick and insect repellent and Sawyer brand premium insect repellent. Next is the Off Family product that I mentioned, Off Family Care Insect Repellent 8 with picaridin. And then there's a couple with the lemon eucalyptus I mentioned, that 30% that is considered very, very safe and very, very effective. One is Natrapel Lemon Eucalyptus Insect Repellent. And the other recommendation is Rapel, R-A-P-E-L, Lemon Eucalyptus Insect Repellent. So those are ones I'd trust that have been tested by independents rather than, you know, the people that make them and would be safe for your children. And I think a heck of a lot better to have around than DEET products. Look up the MSDS, Material Safety Data Sheet, and some stuff on it. It goes through your skin. It's not supposed to be put on children. It tells you only not to put it on you directly on your skin, but to put it on your clothes. Anyway, if you read all of it, you wouldn't put it on your kids. Anyway, those are my recommendations. And yes, mosquitoes are around all the time, but the real important times are dawn and dusk, a few hours either way. Of course, late at night, depending on where you are. But the point being is, do it ahead of time. You've already been nailed a half dozen times, a little bit late. I usually try to do some kind of a climate change thing each week because there's always something going on. But it's usually in the Arctic or up and around us. But here's a little couple of minutes of study done. Climate change and the South Pole. The South Pole has warmed more than 3 times the global average over the past 30 years. While the warming is driven by natural tropic climate variability, the researchers argue that the rising greenhouse gas emissions likely intensified the warming. The climate in the Antarctic has some of the largest ranges in temperature during the year. Some regions, like most of the Western Antarctica and the Antarctica Peninsula, experienced warming during the 20th century. But the South Pole, which is located in the remote and high altitude interior of the continent, actually cooled a little bit for a while in the 80s. The South Pole, as the study highlights shows, has warmed substantially, however, ever since. For the study, which was recently published in the journal Nature Climate Change, the researchers analyzed climate models and weather station data at the South Pole. They found that between the years 1989 and 2018, the South Pole had warmed over 1.8 degrees Celsius. This warming trend of 0.6 degrees Celsius per decade is 3 times the global average overall. According to the study, the robust warming of the Antarctic interior has been mainly driven by the tropics. Warm ocean temperatures in the western tropical Pacific Ocean have altered the winds in the South Atlantic, increasing the delivery of warm air to the South Pole. These atmospheric changes are an important part of what's driving the climate anomalies in that region. But the researchers argue that the warming trends are unlikely a result of natural climate change alone. The effects of anthropogenic, quote-unquote, human-caused climate change in addition to the natural changes have combined to make this one of the strongest warming trends globally ever observed. Not a lot of stuff living down there that you and I think about, but there are a number of different species of penguins, some of which are suffering badly just from this little bit of warming. They're no longer able to hatch their eggs. They can't get in and out of the ocean as quick as they used to. And in some places, the ice has melted so much that they can no longer have the breeding grounds they used to have, and they're having to either find more or just not be able to breed that year. And thanks for tuning in to Organic Matters. Most every week, like I said, I'm getting more and more numbers all the time. I have a rough time keeping up with them, which makes me feel good, but I also would like to more pinpoint the people that are listening. You can always get me at natureapproved@yahoo.com, all lowercase, natureapproved@yahoo, if you want to write me. Or if you just want to hear my show and or get it to other people, it's a little different. It's actually organicmatters.info, all one word, organicmatters.info. But I've gotten some competition, which is good, I guess, on the all my podcasts. So a better way to go is bruce.dooley.com, bruce.dooley.com. That brings only my shows up without the unnecessary advertising or anything. So if you're looking for particular shows, you can get in there. I know there's several hundred, if not more now. So anyway, just a quick thank you for finding me and tuning in, and please tell other people about me. Thanks for listening to Organic Matters.